close proximity has the same dream.
What is it?
A secret that can no longer be kept. It started a month ago.
What started?
A change in the earth and the sky. His power.
There's a weird locking mechanism. Looks like it can only be opened from the inside.
A life form is growing out of prebiotic fluid. It's not winding down into disorder. It's self-organizing. It's becoming something. What?
Today we continue our journey into the John Carpenter Apocalypse Trilogy with Prince of Darkness. One of the greatest horror movies of all time. Top 10 movie for me. And previously we did, well, this is our third episode now in the series. The first one we did, we obviously talked about what the Apocalypse Trilogy was, is, stands for, symbolizes. Then we covered The Thing from 1982. So listen to those shows if you haven't yet. I'll put the links in the show notes. Now we go into Prince of Darkness, which I argue is the best movie of the trilogy. Not a popular opinion. It's a real cult classic. People love it or hate it. And I love it. 1987, so places it, 5 years after The Thing. And we're going to go through it. I've got a lot of notes on this. And like I said before, this is stuff I'm doing. This is the research I'm doing for Use Your Illusion 2, where we go through different films and talk about how they connect into the alien agenda, which I argue is a Luciferian agenda. There's a spiritual component, there's a mental component, it all comes together in Prince of Darkness. So without further ado, let's get into it. Is it worth it? Yes, absolutely. Don't walk, run. It's 101 minutes. Perfect. Perfect length for a movie. 90s perfect. 101 is definitely within the tolerance, though. I bought it on Amazon, I think. I want to say it was like 10 bucks. I would have paid 20. I've seen it many, many times. Now, John Carpenter, he wrote the screenplay for this one, and he did so under the alias of Martin Quatermass. Which is curious, and we'll discuss that later because, again, it ties into The Thing, right? And a lot of people question if Carpenter realized he was making an Apocalypse trilogy before or after. I'd argue before, because what we talked about in The Thing back in 1978's Halloween, you saw on the TV set, they were watching The Thing from outer space, so he knew 4 years before he released The Thing that he was going to do the movie. Think he's playing chess. Think he's thinking ahead. So, yeah, I do think John Carpenter planned this trilogy out. Let's talk about the cast, because you can't talk about this movie without talking about the cast. Donald Pleasance, from Halloween, of course. He's been in many Carpenter films. He's the priest, and that's his name in the movie, The Priest. Which, again, if you listen to the first episode I did about the Carpenter Apocalypse Trilogy, you heard that the characters are of no significance. Who cares what their names are? Who cares if they die? Who cares if they turn into bugs? Who cares if they get consumed by the green Satan juice? Doesn't matter. It's a nihilistic thing. Everything just needs broken down. Who cares? There's no attachment to these characters. Hence, The Priest. Now, Donald Pleasance, we need to take a minute to talk about this guy. He's a legend. Looking at his bio, good Lord, this guy was busy. He served in the British Royal Air Force. He was on an air crew that was shot down. He was imprisoned in a German POW camp. And while he was there, apparently he was producing and acting in plays to entertain his other prisoners of war there. He was in a 1956 film version of 1984, yes. And he was also in a TV version of 1984 a couple years prior to that. So he was woke. He was woke. He played Heinrich Himmler in The Eagle Has Landed. Heinrich Himmler, of course, the sort of the high-octane occultist within the Nazi party there. Then he played Blofeld in James Bond, You Only Live Twice, which was the inspiration for Dr. Evil in Austin Powers, as well as Dr. Claw from Inspector Gadget. He played Lucifer in The Greatest Story Ever Told. How apropos. He was in a Roman Polanski film, Cul-de-Sac. He was in THX 1138. Yes, George Lucas's first film. So he was into his dystopias between the 1984 films and THX 1138. And then, of course, Dr. Loomis in the original Halloween, reprising the role several times. And, of course, you know, he's a favorite of John Carpenter's. He was in many films. And if that wasn't enough, Homeboy also was writing kids' books. This guy stayed busy. Always grinding. Until he died in 1995. You know, this guy wasted no time. So you gotta respect that. Another character in the movie, Victor Wong. He plays Professor Howard Burak. He was in Big Trouble in Little China, another popular Carpenter film. Fun fact, Victor Wong died on September 12th, 2001. The day after 9/11. The day everything changed, they told us. Which will play a role in this film with the alchemical conjunction and creating a new reality. Because as you know, 9/11, the twin towers, the twin pillars of the Kabbalistic Tree of Life were destroyed, and then a single one-world tower created from the ashes. A mass ritual on a symbolic level. But yeah, he died on the day after 9/11, and he died from a heart attack because he was stressed out. He was trying to get a hold of his sons who lived in New York City on 9/11. And, you know, all the phone systems collapsed. It was a real nightmare. And he died of a heart attack. Real sad story there. The other actor who I'd like to, I mean, and this is in no significance of how I presented these. Alice Cooper, the singer, the rocker. He's a homeless killer. And he got on the movie because the executive producer, Shep Gordon, was actually Alice Cooper's manager. In fact, Alice Cooper did a song for the film that you hear for like 2 seconds. 2 seconds and it's over. Oh, boy. And you got to note that there's homeless people in the story that turn into killers at the church. Very appropriate given our discussion of nihilism and the overstepping of going past helping the unfortunate to letting them call the shots, as per Father Seraphim Rose in his book about nihilism I talked about on the Carpenter Apocalypse Trilogy show. It quite literally happens in this film. Speaking of the film, let's get into it. Let's do it. Let's go through it. Again, plot spoilers. You already know that, but I'll walk you through it. And I've got a ton of images, and I will put them on Instagram. They'll probably encompass a few posts, because, I mean, I bet I got 20, 30 images, which are all going to go in the book, Use Your Illusion 2, coming out in 2021, hopefully. We'll see. The film starts out, the first shot you get is the full moon, juxtaposed on the very next shot of an elderly priest dying in his bed. Very Kubrick 2001-ish. The alchemical change of man, which is what this movie's all about, as we'll explain as we go through it. Turns out the priest, and this isn't the priest like Donald Pleasance's priest. This is just a priest that's dying. This priest is revealed to be the holder of the key that unlocks what turns out to be the sealed Antichrist in the basement of the church. And the priest's diary that we later find out, it talks about the Brotherhood of Sleep, which he is apparently a member of. He's a member of a secret society. And he It talks about how they need to keep the secret. Specifically, it calls out the vow of silence. Similar to, if you're taking notes, Dario Argento's trilogy, his apocalypse trilogy. Silentium is what you hear in, I believe it's Inferno. They go deeper into the secret society, the vow of silence, from the alchemists. But that's a whole nother thing. And I plan on doing the Argento trilogy shows because they're some of my favorites. I don't know if they should fit into the book or not. I doubt it. We'll see though. We'll see. Now, Professor Barack, old Barack Obama here. That's, you know, played by Victor Wong. Professor Barack, he's walking on a campus because he's getting ready to profess, and he notices ants humming. He looks up to the sky. He sees an impending eclipse. Again, another reference to 2001 A Space Odyssey with the alchemical conjunction of man. We see a literal conjunction of the planets. Now, what is a conjunction? Let's take a second to talk about that. It's the alchemical recombination of elements. This is the coagulation you see on the Baphomet. Coagula, right? Which Carpenter is showing us in the films, the nihilism stuff, right? Well, the nihilism is your dissolution. That's the solve on the Baphomet, the solve, dissolve. So, quite literally, we're seeing the dissolve and coagulation in real time in these movies. It is the conjunction is the union of male and female within oneself. This has to happen before the initiate can make union with the divine, because the divine requires the knowledge of these things, according to the alchemists. One must master the realm below before they can enter the realm above. Cosmologically, it is when the planets and the stars create life. In the film, we have the alignment of the planets as seen by Victor Wong. Professor Barack, that is, excuse me. The alignment of the planets creates life. It births the Antichrist. Now, recently, on December 21st, 2020, we had the conjunction of Saturn and Jupiter, which supposedly led us into the Age of Aquarius, again, birthing a new life. The alchemical rebirth of man, a 2001 Space Odyssey, all over the first 2 minutes of the film. Now, Professor Barack, he's a teacher, and he's teaching, and he starts talking about Newtonian mechanics meeting quantum physics and how the material world is the tangible realm. But what's real? We think the material world is real, but that's not necessarily the case.
Let's talk about our beliefs and what we can learn about them. We believe nature is solid and time a constant. Matter has substance and time a direction. There is truth in flesh and the solid ground. The wind may be invisible, but it's real. Smoke, fire, water, light, they're different, not as to stone or steel, but they're tangible. And we assume time has narrowed because it is as a clock. 1 second is 1 second for everyone. Cause precedes effect. Fruit rots, water flows downstream. We're born, we age, we die. The reverse never happens. None of this is truth. Say goodbye to classical reality, because our logic collapses on the subatomic level into ghosts and shadows.
So you hear a bunch of wacky woo-woo-ness. He's talking about cause preceding effect, how at the quantum level everything falls apart. Everything they know about the world falls apart. And all of this plants the seed for the higher message of the film about merging science with the spiritual. Quantum is essentially part of the New Age agenda with the observer effect, law of attraction, wave superposition, Schrodinger's cat, action at a distance, all this stuff. Common sense breaks down, common sense being what we could observe with the five senses, Isaac Newton's laws of planetary motion and, you know, laws of, well, the laws of gravity. You know what I'm talking about. Force equals mass times acceleration, all those things. You can observe this stuff in a lab. You can observe it with your eyes. You can see objects falling. You can calculate energies. But when you get to the quantum level, things are a little bit different. They're a little wacky. Like with wave superposition. There's this idea that a particle exists in two places at the same time. And you change, and they're linked. There's quantum entanglement. They're linked over a distance. That's the action at a distance. And you change the state of one, it will change the state of the other instantaneously. How does it do it? They don't know. But it does it. That's what quantum computers are built upon. Now, Father No Name here, the priest, which is, of course, like I said, a very nihilistic idea there. Doesn't even get a name. We'll call him Father Loomis, maybe, huh? Anyway, the priest, he seeks to talk with Professor Barak. Because apparently they had some debate some time ago on television. But now, which is what this movie's about, it's about merging the two thought systems of the spiritual and the material world here. So Professor Barak, he's still teaching. Teaching about how we sought to put order on the universe, but it turns out it's much more chaos than we thought it was. This is, of course, he's saying we're trying to make order out of chaos, and that's not quite possible.
From Job's friends insisting that the good are rewarded and the wicked punished, to the scientists of the 1930s proving to their horror a theorem that not everything can be proved, we've sought to impose order on the universe. But we've discovered something very surprising. While order does exist in the universe, it is not at all what we had in mind.
Professor Barak, in relativity, geometry breaks down on the cosmic scale, and in quantum physics, logic breaks down on the submicroscopic scale.
Now, if you're taking notes, we're 11 minutes into the film. And you'll notice that the credits are still rolling. They're still rolling. And this is at the point we see the screenplay written by Martyr Quatermass, which is John Carpenter. Now Quatermass, this was a British genre of sci-fi and horror type stories, kind of affiliated with Hammer Horror. They were involved with this. And there's a movie called Quatermass in the Pit, and it's a movie about Hobbs End Station. Hobbs End, of course, being what we find in the third film, In the Mouth of Madness, on the Carpenter Apocalypse trilogy, which I'm going to put that breakdown on the supporter feeds. You can sign up now, Patreon, Rockfin, or the VIP system over there on IlluminatiWatcher.com. I have links in the show notes. But the Quatermass in the Pit is a movie about Hobbs End Station, and there's Martians and stuff. But they find a crashed UFO in this story and realize that aliens interfered with human evolution. And it unlocks subconscious memories of our alien Martian past. So you got elements of ancient alien theory. You got elements of the thing with the crashed UFO. It's all there. And of course, you got elements of In the Mouth of Madness with Hobbs End, which Hob, of course, means the devil. You knew that. But Quatermass was the name of a character, and this was Nigel Neal stuff, right? Nigel Neal, one of the most famous screenwriters of all time. He's the foundation for everything you watch today, going back to Hammer Film Productions. So as an homage, John Carpenter wrote the screenplay for this and called himself Martin Quatermass. So there you go. That's what that's all about. Now, moving on. Old priest Loomis there. The priest and Professor Barak, they hop in a limo. Yeah, that's right. A limousine. A priest and a school professor, they hop in their limo, as one does. And they go, they're in the hood. They go to some hood-ass church. And the priest tells the professor how the elderly priest we saw dying at the beginning was a guardian priest of this hood-ass church. And now, the new priest there, he's going to be the caretaker of this thing in the basement. The thing in the basement, yes. So, they go in the church, they go downstairs, they go underground, which, you know what happens underground, that's the initiate. The initiate goes underground to die and symbolically be reborn. You saw this in Deadpool. You see this in the movies. You see this in all the Freemasonic rituals, the mystery school teachings. They go underground to symbolically die so they can come above ground, reborn as the new enlightened candidate.
Built in the 1500s. By arrangement with the Spanish government.
Who knew about this?
Only the members of this forgotten sect. The Brotherhood of Sleep. There was a vow of silence. Even their very existence was kept from the Holy See.
The Vatican didn't know.
The guardian priest would keep the secret. And before he died, would pass it on to another. The sect had enormous power and authority. Their actions were never questioned.
So we learn more about the Brotherhood of Sleep. They were kept silent, Silentium, there. They were kept silent from the Vatican and everyone else. They had power, they had authority because of their hidden secret. This is very much Knights Templar-ish, right? The Knights Templar, of course, raiding Solomon's Temple, finding something, the Holy Grail maybe, leveraging that to become very powerful and influential. Then we see the big secret, big reveal, down in the basement. A large vat of green juice surrounded by a bunch of crucifixes. This is your Antichrist juice. And, you know, this plays a role alchemically because green is representative of the Hermetic Emerald Tablets. This is, in alchemy, it's the fermentation process is represented by green. And the fermentation process is used to... They break down organisms like bacteria, which is very appropriate for the movie because you see the emphasis on bugs and people turning into bugs and people getting broken down. They're going through the fermentation process. They are the bacteria, humans are the virus. This is why the lion is green in alchemy, which I believe is in Wicker Man, the Green Lion Inn, if I'm not mistaken. In alchemy, it takes place after the conjunction of the planets, which you already saw in the film, and it's the introduction of new life through the energies of the higher planes of consciousness. So that's why it's green, or so I argue. So the priest, he's showing Professor around, they go to an altar, there's a book. And it's got this coded message in mixture of Greek and Latin and Coptic and numerology. And you hear him say it's a secret that can no longer be kept. So they're thinking, well, we gotta translate this text, this book. It's this weird mix mash of all these things. That's where the professor will come into play. And then you hear about how previously there was a change in the earth and the sky. Of his power, a satanic charge of energy, I would argue. But they're noticing these things in the sky. And we see it depicted with the conjunction of the planets. Make no mistake about it. There's elements of alchemical conjunction going on there. Well, the professor, he decides, okay, I know what we'll do. Look, I got all these physics students. Let's have them come in. We'll do a sleepover at this hood-ass church. To crack the code of this book. Which is funny to me because like this is supposed to be like graduate school or even higher than that maybe. It might be like doctorate level. And he's professors teaching them quantum physics 101 that they should have learned in undergrad. And now on top of that, he needs these dumb postdoctorate students. He needs their advanced knowledge to decode the secrets. It doesn't make any sense, but that's okay. We're all right with that. And here's where you start getting introduced to the students a little more. But again, you don't care about any of them. You really don't. There's some great, cheesy 80s motifs. Brian Marsh showing off his sleight of hand card tricks to the girl, the female student, his love interest. Are chicks really impressed with that? With guys who spend a lot? I mean, it's not easy. I try to learn card tricks, sleight of hand stuff. It takes a lot of time. Join the conversation on the social media feeds. What do you think? What do you think, ladies? You want your man to spend that much time learning card tricks? Now, the guy who plays Brian Marsh, his name is Jameson Parker. Fun fact, he was shot by his neighbor, but lived? Yes. Like 50 Cent. This guy's like a 50 Cent. Neighbor, of course, convicted on attempted murder. I don't know what happened. Maybe he was showing his neighbor's old lady some card tricks and he didn't like that, maybe. I don't know. I don't want to assume or allege. So back to the movie. We're getting introduced to the characters, the students from the school. Ants are going crazy everywhere. The bugs are going nuts. They sense, because the bugs sense the conjunction of the planets above. They know what's going on. And you hear the priest, he's talking about how our stubborn belief in common sense is actually what keeps Satan alive down at the atomic level.
It's your disbelief that powers him. Your stubborn faith in common sense that allows his deception. He lives in the smallest parts of it. In the atoms. Smaller. Invisible. He lives in all of it. In the sum of its parts. We must translate this book. You must prove it scientifically. Convince the outside world.
The outside world doesn't want to hear this kind of bullshit. Just keep it locked away. You've already managed that for 2,000 years.
No prison can hold him now.
So Professor Barak, he needs to translate this book, convince the outside world that Satan's here, but he thinks the priest should just keep it a secret. But the problem is there's no prisons that can contain this satanic force that's about to be unleashed. So there's this sort of quandary about what they should do. And they decide they're going to like just take care of matters at the hood-ass church. So back to Brian Marsh, old fake David Copperfield here. He takes his lady, the Scarlet Woman, she's a redhead. He takes the Scarlet Woman out for coffee at midnight. She's going to be up all night long, buddy, drinking coffee at midnight. Who does that? And it cuts to a scene of them sleeping in bed together. Bam! Just that easy. He's got those abs, though. He's got those 80s abs, so I get it. Anyway, they get done making sexy time. He steps outside, he looks up in the sky, and he sees the conjunction, too. Everyone sees it. The bugs, the professor, the priest, Brian Marsh. So you get these shots of the conjunction. Clearly a recurring theme. Make no mistake about that. Then, yeah, homeless Alice Cooper, he shows up with a legion of psycho zombie bums. It turns out they were triggered by the solar activity. And they now are meeting up at the hood-ass church. As the students show up at the church, and they're setting up shop. They've got, you won't believe the insane amount of equipment they brought, the lab equipment. It's like a full triage lab of every piece of equipment on the planet. And one woman, she tells another about how her parents went to this church until the 1950s when it was mysteriously shut down, which of course is referencing that they got the Satan juice and they stored it in the basement, and that's when things shut down. Now, to me, that's very curious, because if you read Aliens, UFOs, and the Occult, Huge Illusion 1, I told you about the occult history of the aliens and the UFOs, and how Jack Parsons, who said he was the Antichrist and he loved Lucifer and Satan, he was doing these rituals out in the desert, the Babylon workings, because he wanted to bring about the end, the Scarlet Woman, to bring about the end times. in 1947, and of course you got the Roswell crash that happened afterwards, and then you got the Collins elite who were investigating all this stuff since then, and they've been trying to tell the Pentagon, look, you can't do this, you're going to bring Satan into our world. I talked about it in the book, you read the whole thing, I'm sure, right? Yeah, it was good. Now, is the green juice from the crash in Roswell from 1947? Maybe. Just an idea. I don't know if it's true. So then we see they've got, like, you know, like I said, they got all this lab equipment. They got beakers, which is curious because, you know, this is tying into all the alchemical processes with the chambers everywhere. They start translating this book and they reveal some scary messages. I, Jesus, have sent mine angel to testify unto you this thing which shall be unleashed. And see lots of cool, like, 80s computer screens spitting all this stuff out. Very much a all your bases belong to us kind of thing. And what's that message saying? It's saying that there was an angel who sent the message of this satanic thing that was to be unleashed. An angel, which to me is an alien. Right? The aliens are possibly angels and possibly demons. So meanwhile, the zombie psycho killer bums, they're standing in a circle around the church. And this is just like, and again, I'll put the photo on the Instagram. This is just like the thing. I talked about this on the thing analysis. The researchers are standing around the UFO, the crashed UFO, in the same kind of circle as the zombie bums standing outside the church, which is where the alien green juice came and was put. So it's almost the same exact thing. I don't know if anyone's ever put that together. That might be an exclusive here. Like I said, I've seen this movie many, many times. Too many times. So again, tying into my concern that this satanic force is actually the aliens. Right? Then, almost to prove my point about 1947 Roswell and Jack Parsons, you hear about some of the texts says, Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and the abominations of the earth. Just like Parsons was trying to bring the Whore of Babylon to bring about the end of earth. And this is what Aleister Crowley was talking about with all of his scarlet women. It's almost like it all fits in perfectly, doesn't it? So you got all these students, these nerds, they're collecting data for a while. And we start to see some activity in the basement, the green juice. It's starting to get hot. Well, then they find there's differential equations found in this book from 2,000 years ago. And they're like, well, this is before we invented differential equations. Now, fact check, because I'm a math nerd. I'm a math minor in college. Is that true? Let's fact check it. Well, calculus was invented by Isaac Newton and Leibniz. I forget how you pronounce the name. I remember talking about Leibniz in college, but I don't remember how they pronounce the name. Anyway, calculus. It's a method for determining two unknowns that come together as a function, all right? And differentials falls out from that. And fun fact, differential equations, we call them DEs in the biz. DEs was my worst performing class in college math. I got a B, which is very devastating because I told you I was a math nerd. I actually wanted to graduate with a 4.0 at an engineering bachelor's. Ended up with a 3.9. Not bad. Not bad. I'm the king of nerds, see? I'm always making fun of the nerds. I say the nerds are going to kill us. It's going to be me. I'm the nerd of all nerds. Sad thing is, in the last 10 years, I haven't really used the math. It's mostly gone. It revives once in a great while, but it's a struggle. But anyway, that's not true. Oh, I mean, it's... Okay, so differentials. Yes, it's true that differentials were actually invented only after calculus, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong. Correct me if I'm wrong. But they definitely weren't 2,000 years ago. So, fact check stands up. Good job, John Carpenter. Another message we hear, and the Prince of Darkness was himself sealed. That old life called the devil and Satan, which deceiveth the whole world. Then we see Walter, another character you could care less about. All the characters are like unlikable as hell. He's watching Tom and Jerry. And you'll notice on the episode, purposefully placed, is the devil on the screen. And on top of that, it's on Channel 6. 666, yes. One of these nerds, he's outside, and he sees a crucified pigeon. And this is when the zombie bums attack. Alice Cooper comes in and kills him while you hear 2 seconds of the Alice Cooper song playing. Good timing. So they're translating the book. They find out the container was buried in the Middle East by the father of Satan, who was a god before man, and thus the son of Satan is inside the container, and Christ was an alien who warned us of all of this.
This whole section's a kind of history. Part of it was indecipherable, as if someone were deliberately trying to erase it. I managed to piece together most of it. Okay, it kind of starts here. The container was buried somewhere in the Middle East eons ago by... gets a little wild here. The father of Satan, a god who once walked the earth before man but was somehow banished to the dark side. Apparently, the father buried his son inside the container. This was a section someone was trying to erase. Now, later on here, Christ comes to warn us. He was of extraterrestrial ancestry, but a human-like race.
So we're like halfway through the film, right? All hell starts breaking loose. The green juice is going wild. It's got the juice, baby. It sprays out. It hits homegirl in the mouth. Susie. It hits Susie in the mouth. High velocity. Which, again, just like the thing. If you listen to my thing analysis, that's what the alien juice did there from the alien. They were shooting it at everybody. Now, the story we are revealed is that Christ is crazy, and he gets killed, and his disciples hide the juice until technology can catch up and get rid of it somehow. And the priest says that the church has been lying the whole time.
Finally, they determine Christ is crazy, but he's also gaining power, converting a lot of people to his beliefs, so they kill him. But his disciples keep the secret and hide it from civilization until man could develop a science sophisticated enough to prove what Christ was saying.
Something like this can really fuck up your weekend.
How did the Roman Catholic Church manage to keep this a secret for 2,000 years?
Apparently a decision was made to characterize pure evil as a spiritual force, evil within, the darkness in the hearts of men. That was more convenient. In that way, man remained at the center of things. A stupid lie. We were salesmen. That's all. We sold our product to those who didn't have it. The new life. Reward ourselves, punish our enemies, so we can live without truth. Substance, malevolence, that was the truth. Asleep until now.
So you got these Gnostic elements. The church is lying. And evil was called a spiritual force in the hearts of man in order to keep man at the center of all things. All of this done to sell Christianity. And reality is that substance was the truth of all evil. Not man. There's nothing wrong with man. They're saying the material world is evil. This is very Gnostic. And this is funny because the priest is saying all this. He had a change of heart real quick. So you got some elements of a Gnostic prison planet here. Meanwhile, debate ensues on whether this crazy stuff is real. And in the basement, old Susie, she got the green juice. Now she's possessed. She has a full breakdown of the ego. She's no longer Susie. She's getting ready to unleash the satanic energies on the rest of the nerds. And the nerds, they're doing their lab experiments. They determine the juice is conscious and psychokinetic. It can make things move. It's also, at the same time, a sign of intelligence outside of man. Very prolific. And all this time, Walter, he's the Asian guy. walking around offending absolutely everyone for no reason at all. He even mocks Lisa, an Asian female. He mocks her for being Asian. And then he says he's suffering from a homosexual panic, which isn't very woke. And I'm, you know, at this point, you're like, I'm not sure who I want to see get it next. Who's next? Start giving that green juice out. They all need to die. Should Walter die? How about Dr. Paul? He's this old nerd who's walking around humming, whistling, all proud with his coffee and his cookies and his books. A little too excited to be doing this. But yeah, and the point is, like, you're not supposed to like these characters. You're okay with them dying because it's a nihilistic film. Then Barack, Professor Barack, he says, well, what if faith is correct and a universal consciousness is out there, but every positive has a negative?
Suppose what your faith has said was essentially correct. Suppose there is a universal mind controlling everything, a God willing the behavior of every subatomic particle. Now, every particle has an antiparticle, its mirror image, its negative side. Maybe this universal mind resides in the mirror image instead of in our universe as we wanted to believe. Maybe he's anti-God, bringing darkness instead of light.
Why weren't we told the truth?
Without the technology to confirm, it would have been another legend. But he was our prisoner, not yours.
We had a responsibility to warn the rest of the world. Only the corrupt are listened to now. They tell us what we want to hear. We believe it to be divine light. Just got colder in here. Suddenly, as if something moved through the room.
So again, you've got this Gnostic idea with these sort of twin energies, and he's talking about the mirror image, antimatter to matter, the union of opposites. And, you know, this universal consciousness talk, that's New Age stuff too. This is the perennial philosophy. This is the panpsychism buried deep within the ancient aliens philosophy. But in the movie, the zombie bums are lining up. Old possessed Susie, she's sending out evil vibes. She's trying to murder the nerds. Then Walter, he is the first to receive this strange dream sequence that says it's 1999, and you get little bits of it throughout the film, and as the film progresses, the dream sequence goes longer and longer until the end where you get to see like most of the dream, right? Now Professor Barack, he also has the same dream because they all start having the dream while sleeping in his office. He wakes up and the priest is sitting there watching him. Very creepy. And he said, it's funny, but anyway, immediately the priest, like professor wakes up, looks over, the priest is staring at him. The priest starts going in about how the Brotherhood of Sleep all have these same dreams. It's a premonition and it unfolds the more that one dreams. So meanwhile, Susie, she's spreading the green juice to the nerds. Now Lisa's infected. And she's mindlessly typing I live over and over. She types out, you will not be saved by the Holy Ghost. You, by the God Plutonium. In fact, you will not be saved. Very scary stuff. All your base belong to us, but the devil. Kelly, she's got a bruise on her arm. But she, and who's Kelly? Who cares? Doesn't matter. Just another student. She doesn't notice that there's a giant inverted cross with the hook, which is the same symbol found from the ancient texts. And they talk about the tachyons. But anyways, so the bruise on her arm, this sort of is in the shape is symbolic because it's the inverted cross that you find in the book. Sorry, I didn't explain that too well. But they don't. She doesn't really notice that. You notice it as the viewer if you look for it. Then they talk about the tachyons. This is a Greek word for swift one. And that's what they're blaming the visions on. They think they're having tachyons. And they talk about how, you know, subatomic particles are faster than light. They were sent from the future. Because like I said, it's there's the dreams. They say it's 1999, but the film's 1987. If you go faster than the speed of light, you can go back in time. That's the argument here. Now, Susie and Lisa, they're both infected with the green juice. They're both demonic at this point. They take out Calder. And Calder, again, just another student. He's a black guy. And usually in the horror movies, they kill the black guys first. Why? I don't know. I don't make movies. But not this time. Because Calder gives you the most terrifying part of the film. Because what happens is Wyndham, another student, he's outside. And he's speaking in this warbled voice. It's just terrifying. He's like, I got a message for you and you're not going to like it. And he says, pray for death. And then the bugs. There's bugs all over him. They consume his body and his head literally falls off. And then Calder shows up. And, you know, he almost had that three-way with Susie and Lisa. But he, like, cuts his own throat in front of everybody. I mean, this is like, things are going off the rails. This is like pure nihilism hell.
Hello? Hello?
Hey, Wyndham!
Hello? Hello?
Come here, look at this.
I've got a message for you, and you're not going to like it.
Look at his chest.
Ready for death.
Jesus Christ!
So Walter, he's still alive, unfortunately, and he sees Kelly, and she's got that inverted cross bruise, and she sprays the green liquid from her mouth and eyeball sockets, and Walter evades, and he hides in a closet. He's trapped in a closet like R. Kelly, which is ironic because he said earlier that he had the homosexual panic, and now he's in the closet. Is that symbolic? I don't know. I don't know what Carpenter was doing there. But at this point, everything's busted open now. Lisa, she takes out Dr. Paul with the green juice. All the dead dudes are walking around ominously. It's like the zombie bums. And, you know, Priest is like, he's ready to dip. He's done. So now Kelly, don't count Kelly out yet. She's pregnant now. She is the Scarlet Woman. She's the Whore of Babylon. We thought it was Susie because she's the redhead. Nope. It's Kelly. She's apparently infected with the baby of Satan's son. And we find out that Satan's son is trying to bring old daddy back through a gestation of sorts.
Worker ants, driven to a higher purpose, unknown to the individual. Street people, our colleagues, all controlled.
Demonic possession?
Of a kind. Not what we would expect, though. Never that.
Why would he need us? The book says his purpose is to bring the father back from the dark side. Wherever that is.
There could be a limit as to what he can do, you know, as a volume of liquid. He controls simple organisms easily. But maybe he needs something more complex to complete a life cycle. A host in which to live.
Hello?
Walter? It's Kelly. She's changing again. The swelling's gone down, as if the liquid was absorbed into her system. I can see tissue changes on her face. Also, I think her bone structure is changing.
Maybe this is the only way he could actualize his power. A parasite growing into its host. This could be some kind of gestation period.
I knew I'd seen it before. Kelly had a mark. It was a bruise, almost like a figure. I saw it in a history book, the astrologer's staff used in ritual magic in the Middle Ages.
The mark was on her?
Yes. So she were chosen.
Walter!
What?
Keep watching her closely. Anything you see, tell us.
So Kelly, you know, she's got this symbol on her arm. It's the astrologer's staff. She was chosen as the vessel. She is the Scarlet Woman. She is the one that Parsons, through the Babylon workings with L. Ron Hubbard, was trying to incarnate. Got the green juice from Roswell, and the green juice has been in the church ever since. See how this all fits together? Possibly? Maybe? I don't know. Then we get the second creepiest visual in the film as Kelly awakens and has an absolutely horrifying look on her face. And she stares right at Walter. And she's sort of smiling. And it's, oh my god. It makes your skin crawl. This is why it's like one of the best horror movies, because it's creepy as hell. And the priest, he's praying for the servants of Christ who were caught in the coils. And, you know, because Satan's son is now possessing everybody. And he repeatedly asks, where are you? This is nihilism in the finest. God is dead in this story. I mean, the priest also, like, to be fair, kind of like sold out the Christian faith when he started pushing Gnosticism on his people. But anyway, it doesn't matter. It's nihilism at its finest. God is literally dead on the screen. Then we got to play on mirrors. Calder, he's staring in the mirror. Kelly, she's reaching into the abyss through the mirror to her father, Satan. With the compact mirror as well. And then here comes Satan father. We're at the end of the movie here now. Here comes Satan, old daddy Satan. He shows up as a light source. Which makes sense, right? Lucifer, the bringer of light. And the priest, he starts cutting Kelly's arms and head off. It's no matter, though. She just reattaches it. Because this is hell on earth. Kelly, she reaches through the window to Daddy, Satan. Because the window is now a portal, just like symbolically we're told they are. Like Alice in Wonderland. And she makes the unholy contact with Satan's big creepy hand. And she starts pulling him through. Until Susie decides to be the hero and plunges through the portal with Kelly. They slip into the abyss. The souls all leave the bodies of those possessed, and the zombie bums go back to just being bums. And that's how the movie ends. I wish there was a sequel. Maybe someday. Now, in conclusion, let's wrap up what we saw here, because there's a lot going on. Nihilism, I don't want to beat the point to death. I mean, this is the Carpenter Apocalypse trilogy. We already talked about it. But you see it demonstrated, the loss of individuality, the loss of the control over oneself. No one's got free will. Just like in The Thing, the green goo gets shot in your mouth. Now you're taken over. We see the bugs throughout the film. That's you. You're the bugs. Because this is nihilism. And it's just, you know, Gnosticism is just a prison planet. We're all just bugs. We're all just bacteria. We're all just going to turn into dirt. It's also about the blurring of realms. The blending of as above, so below. You've got the dream world. You've got the supernatural. You got the quantum. You got the physical. You got the macro and the micro with the conjunctions. A major theme in my book, Use Your Illusion 1. Now, let's talk about the dreams for just a second. If you go to Peter Lavenda's The Dark Lord, there's some interesting notes. I'm going to read you from the book. His most influential, he's referring to H.P. Lovecraft. His most influential work, the short story Call of Cthulhu, is specific in its depiction of artists as the first people on the planet to become aware that something cosmic was taking place involving the race from the stars and the sinister, slumbering high priest Cthulhu. Some of this awareness is communicated through dreams, and dream control is a key element of the Grant technique. Take, for example, these quotes first from Lovecraft and then from Grant. It was from the artists and poets that the pertinent answers came, and I know that panic would have broken loose had they been able to compare notes. These responses from aesthetes told a disturbing tale. From February 28th to April 2nd, a large proportion of them had dreamed very bizarre things, the intensity of the dreams being immeasurably the stronger during the period of the sculptor's delirium. Some of the dreamers confessed acute fear of the gigantic nameless thing visible towards the last. 131 certain... that's a reference, sorry. Certain fugitive elements appear occasionally in the works of poets, painters, mystics, and occultists, which may be regarded as genuine magical manifestations, in that they demonstrate the power and ability of the artist to evoke elements from an extra-dimensional and alien universe that may be captured only by the most sensitive and delicately adjusted antennae of human consciousness. Now, that's what these dreams are about. It's tuning in the antenna of the DNA of the artist to pull elements from the other dimensions. I'm going to read a little more. It's important to understand that Grant, that's Kenneth Grant, places a great deal of importance on what he calls dream control and devotes a chapter to it in his Outer Gateways Dream. Actions are a clue to the magical condition of the subliminal self. The dream is all we may know normally of the fourth dimension while we are embodied three-dimensionally. So again, higher planes of dimension, higher planes of existence. It's like this Great Awakening, how they say the Great Conjunction is opening up the fifth dimension. Keep reading. But we are not so embodied while dreaming. We are then already a step ahead, even although we are still viewing the scene from another dimension, an inner dimension, which differs from dreamless sleep in that it is not totally formless and void. The extra dimension is the Mauve Zone. And if you're taking notes, I talked about the Mauve Zone in Use Your Illusion 1. Because it's very important. There's an even crazier link we need to consider. Here we go. I'm going to read you again. He's talking about the Call of Cthulhu. How it starts with an earthquake on February 28th. And ends on April 2nd, 1925. Which is the day that an important meeting of the Surrealists took place in Paris. A meeting that would decide how the artistic movement would become politically active, and which produced the Memorandum of the Surrealist Revolution. Lovecraft never refers to this meeting, of course, and it's doubtful whether or not he would have been aware of it at all. However, the bookending of an earthquake on one side and the Surrealist Memorandum on the other is perfectly consistent with Lovecraft's storyline. The shattering effect of the earthquake that shakes the sunken city where Cthulhu lies dead but dreaming, causing him to awaken from his ancient slumber, and the certain state of fury that informed the Surrealist movement as these avant-garde artists struggled with altered states of consciousness and altered political states. It talks about the earthquake awakens Cthulhu and the artist. The ones most likely to have sensitive to occultism, psychology, and automatic writing, which is kind of what we see in Prince of Darkness. These students are introduced to the occult, the Gnostic ideas, the quantum physics ideas, and we even see the automatic writing. They're typing out on the screen. What's her name? The one girl, she's typing out like how she's Satan now. And all these things, they assemble in a certain state of fury to decide how artistic transgression and political transgression can work together. Blase, blase, blah. But the dreams were seeded by the high priest of the old ones, that's the aliens, who needs social unrest and dislocation to give followers the space to perform the orgia necessary to open the channels, the gates to the underworld. What's he saying? He's saying that the surreal art movement had an actual coordinated effort as part of a political movement. All of this done to destroy the civilized world as we know it, burn it to the ground. Surrealism leads to communism because the old ones, the aliens, seeded all of it through the dreams. The aliens want civil unrest so people could conduct orgia, crazy sex stuff, and occult rituals to open the gates to let them through.
This is not a dream. Not a dream. We are using your brain's electrical system as a receiver. We are unable to transmit through conscious neural interference. You are receiving this broadcast as a dream. We are transmitting from the year 1999. You are receiving this broadcast in order to alter the events you are seeing. Our technology has not developed a transmitter strong enough to reach your conscious state of awareness. But this is not a dream. You are seeing what is actually occurring. Practice some causality violation.
Isn't that bizarre? Finally, there's three dream states, according to Kenneth Grant. There's the dream state, the dreamless state, and the waking state. The dream state being analogous to the MOV zone, an intermediary state between that of waking and dream and dreamless sleep. All activity has its origin in the dream state, whether activity is conscious and willed or instinctual and reactive. The dream state is the plane on which both mental and astral activity takes place. It is also the state in which Cthulhu communicates with his followers. In the Grant system, this is not a fictional device. It's real. It's real to these folks. And that's what you see in Prince of Darkness. That's what the dream is all about. The messages from the aliens trying to nihilistically destroy our world, destroy the cultural norms, so we have sexy time and orgy time and all these things that connect us with the higher consciousness so that the aliens can come back. Talk about a mind blower. But we're not done yet. We got one more film, In the Mouth of Madness, the third film in the Carpenter Apocalypse trilogy. We're going to get into H.P. Lovecraft. We're going deep into Lovecraft territory with this one. Fiction becoming reality. It's going to be wild. Like I said, it's going to be on the supporter feeds as my way of saying thanks to the supporters. You can join. Go to IlluminatiWatcher.com, get in the VIP section. Go to Patreon.com/IlluminatiWatcher. Or go to Rockfin.com/creator/Isaac. They each have their own thing. I've got a comparison chart on IlluminatiWatcher.com on the VIP page. See which one you like the most. I thank you for your support. Check it out. See which one you like. And until next time, you know what to do. Stay woke.